especially now in business, what's valued in leadership are the soft skills, not the kind of dictatorial, you know, top-down command and control. So this is a time where analysts can be extremely valuable in the business world. I think, you know, most of us who do the work that we do and took the path that we took to get here, sit in our offices and, you know, with patients behind the couch, and we're so laser focused on this, on the one-on-one clinical experience, that we kind of forget that we actually have a lot to offer if we broaden our perspective.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and off the couch. This is a podcast in which we will discover the world of psychoanalysis that lives beyond the couch, beyond the individual consultation room. We will meet psychoanalysts who work in dialysis units, prenatal clinics, corporate boardrooms, community centers, humanitarian organizations, and with vineyard workers, just to name a few. We hope these conversations expand our awareness of how broadly psychoanalytic thinking extends into our communities. Come listen, enjoy, and please share your comments on the webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org.
Welcome, everyone, to today's podcast. I am Dr. Stephen Rolfe. I'm an analyst on the faculty of the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia and chair of the American Psychoanalytic Association's Committee on Corporate and Organizational Consulting. I'm managing principal of Rolfe Advisory and Sante Advisory, and specialize in psychodynamic leadership advisory services for CEOs, business owners, and leaders in crisis. I'm very pleased today to welcome Dr. Lisa Rozoff from the Emory Psychoanalytic Institute in Atlanta. Lisa is a board-certified psychiatrist and fellow of the American Board of Psychoanalysis. She was a practicing attorney and member of the California Bar before attending medical school at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine. She graduated from psychiatry residency and psychoanalytic training at Emory University School of Medicine. She's a practicing psychiatrist and psychoanalyst in private practice in Atlanta, and an adjunct assistant professor at Emory University Department of Psychiatry. She has provided executive coaching to MBA students through Emory Goizueta Business School Leadership Coaching Fellows Program and to participants in Goizueta's leadership training programs. Most recently, she contributed as a faculty member in the Emory Diploma Program in Executive Coaching. Lisa's an adjunct assistant professor of psychiatry at Emory and a faculty member of the Emory Psychoanalytic Institute, where she has taught analytic writing, technique, and dreams, and an inactive member of the California Bar. Lisa, welcome. Thank you for joining. Our audience will be excited to hear about the programs you and your colleagues have developed through the Emory Psychoanalytic Institute and the Goizueta Business School, an analytically oriented program in executive coaching, the first and I believe the only program of its kind in the country. Perhaps we could begin by your telling us a bit about the Emory Institute and what gave rise to the interest in developing this particular program.
Sure. Well, first of all, Steve, I just want to thank you for this opportunity to share this really exciting, unique experience. Our little institute is known for innovation, and our collaboration with the business school is our most recent foray in that direction. A lot of pieces and people came together at the right time to develop this collaboration between the Goizueta Business School and the Emory Psychoanalytic Institute. What really stood out to me is that new relationships were formed and a really exciting, innovative program was created on the brink of disaster. And I'll explain what I mean by that. But first, I just need to give you the context. Emory University has several schools, including the Goizueta Business School and the Medical School. The Emory Psychoanalytic Institute is a component of Emory University, and it's embedded in the medical school in the Department of Psychiatry. We are a relatively small institute with about 25 active volunteer faculty, and we have new classes beginning every 2 years. Emory provides us a building and a part-time salary for the director and the administrator. And the institute is expected to cover its own expenses through case fees and through tuition. It's primarily how we've done it in the past. But we had really been operating in the red for several years.
I see.
So what happened was we had the financial crisis of 2011. We couldn't have known it then, but this crisis provided the seed from which this coaching program ultimately began.
How was the initial connection with Goizueta established?
In order to understand it, I need to give you kind of the cast of characters. There are four main people here. There's Dr. Mark Rappaport, who's the Runette Harris Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry. Dr. Gail Anderson is the Adjunct Professor of Psychiatry and was then the new director of the Institute. Dr. Rick Gilkey is a professor in the practice of organization and management in the Goizueta Business School and also professor of psychiatry. And the last person is Lieutenant General Ken Keene, who is Associate Dean for Leadership of Organization and Management at the Business School. So for simplicity's sake, I will refer to most of these people by their first names and the Goizueta Business School as the Business School and the Emory Institute as the Institute. Otherwise, it's just a mouthful. So what happened was in 2011, Dr. Rappaport became the chair of the Department of Psychiatry. He inherited a department that was deep in debt, and he was given a mandate to return the department to solvency, and he had the power to cut any programs that could not turn their books around and operate in the black. So the Institute was on the chopping block, potentially. Gail Anderson was the new director of the Institute. Mark told Gail to make a business plan to fix the Institute's debt problems. Well, they don't teach you how to make a business plan in residency or analytic training. So Gail said, I need some help here. So Mark introduced Gail to Rick. And Rick is the bridge between psychiatry and the business school. We didn't even know him. Most of us didn't even know him until this happened. Rick is a clinical psychologist trained in an analytically oriented program, and he's an avid supporter of psychoanalysis. And as I said, he has a joint appointment in the business school and psychiatry department. Most of his teaching is in the business school. And his experience there gave him the perspective that psychoanalysts had a lot to offer in the business world. We just didn't know it yet. We have this small institute, and we have these kind of nice traditions. And one of them is that we have regular faculty retreats every 2 years. We go off for a weekend in the North Georgia Mountains, and we have a topic, and we often have invited guests. And the topic that year was, how are we going to turn our books around? Not particularly exciting topic, but very necessary. So that year, Gail invited Rick to come, and he gave a fascinating presentation on emotional intelligence, which was a term that many of us had never heard of. He argued that as analysts, we could marshal our knowledge to teach future business leaders and generate income for the Institute. So it was a win-win. He also invited any faculty who was interested to audit his course that he was going to teach that semester called Leading with Emotional Intelligence. And so I'm always eager to learn, and I signed up right away. That's how I began to get involved in the business school.
So could you say something about how the program developed and how the analysts began working with business students and what an analytic perspective provided these students?
First, I need to clarify that we'll be talking about two different programs. The first one involves the MBA students in the Leadership Coaching Fellows program, and we're going to refer to them as students. The second program, which I'll talk about later, is the Emory Diploma Program in Executive Coaching, and we called those participants candidates. So we have two different programs. The first one was the Coaching Fellows Program. In about 2012, General Keene and others developed this Leadership Coaching Fellows Program in the business school. It was both didactic and experiential, and the purpose of the program was to teach the second year MBA students to coach the first year MBA students on team projects to improve performance. Part of the faculty included executive coaches who were going to serve as mentors and supervisors to the second year budding coaches. Rick believed that as psychoanalysts, we could serve essentially as executive coaches in guiding these students as they learned critical coaching skills such as listening, building alliances, self-awareness, and group dynamics. So he invited the Institute faculty to participate, and many of us got involved. So we were called executive coaches, even though none of us were actually executive coaches at the time.
But for you, it was a similar skill to supervision.
Right. It was along the lines of supervision, exactly. But it was business students. But for the first time, we're working not with psychoanalytic candidates or residents, but second year graduate business students who are goal driven, under time pressure. They were used to structured meetings with pre-planned agendas, and they talked about deliverables. So we were a little bit of fish out of water. We had to learn their language. What we did as analysts was we helped them see the value of a different perspective. As you said, it's kind of analogous to clinical supervisors. I can tell you in the beginning, so this was a new program. These were new students doing this. And in the beginning, they were anxious. They would come with preformed, structured questionnaires, and they would pepper their first-year students with these questions. They were directive and kind of prone to advice giving. And so we understood how to deal with that. But with the limited time that we had, we worked with them to shift into a more open-ended inquiry, listening for themes, suspending their own judgments, tuning into their own feelings and reactions, and being less solution-driven. And I can give you an example of one way that we worked with them in particular. The second-year students had a team, because they work in teams in the business school, and they usually had around six students. And each team would get a peer assessment by kind of like a 360, but it was by everyone on their team. And the second-year students were going to meet with each of the first-year students to review their assessment. Rather than their usual kind of managerial directive approach, we worked with the second-year coaches to take an open-ended stance, to allow the first-year student to explore in a non-judgmental way the content of the assessment, and ultimately to arrive with a sense of how they are as a person and a team member, what their assets were and what their challenges were, and begin to create a plan to improve their group participation. And it was very rewarding. The program was funded. The analyst work was compensated both directly and partially to the Institute. And with our participation in this program alone, within a year, our Institute was running in the black.
That's quite amazing.
It was pretty amazing.
So did you receive funding for this program?
Yes, this program actually got over $1 million from Delta. It's now called the Delta Program. We got funding from Delta, Coca-Cola, and other businesses in the community. It's not clear whether our work as analysts in the Coaching Fellows Program directly influenced community funding decisions, but over the years, the Institute, being a part of Emory and part of the medical school, became well known to business leaders. And we built strong relationships with our work among various people in the business community. And we believe that had a big appeal and partially led to the funding. So that program is ongoing.
Well, it's a fascinating idea, because I think it's a non-threatening way to coach second-year students. And I think that must translate into them being able to help the first-year students.
Exactly.
So was it this program that morphed into the executive coaching program?
No, not at all. So it preceded it. The Leadership Coaching Fellows Program continued to grow and flourish, and it's now beginning its fifth year. It's well-established in the business school. It's now a four-credit course. It's become so popular that they had to develop an application process. The students who participated in the first year, who were coached by the second years, they are signing up in droves to do it. The second year graduates have found that their participation has provided an edge for future employment. And even the graduates who come back and talk about their participation in this program tout the success in their current job. So it's very successful. The next program, the Emory Diploma Program in Executive Coaching, was Rick's brainchild. He had that all along. We just got one thing. We did one thing and then did another thing. And what his thinking was is that coaching, as we know, coaching is a worldwide phenomenon. There are plenty of organizations, including internationally, that sponsor high-quality programs. But Rick knew that there's just a tremendous variability in the quality of programs to train and educate coaches. And he believed that with our varied resources and access to talented people at Emory, we could create a unique multidisciplinary diploma program with a prominent psychoanalytic component. And so over the course of the year, he collected different faculty from different parts of psychiatry and the business world and the institute, and we assembled an executive committee and subcommittees, and we began to meet to discuss our ideas and to plan how we could structure this program and get ready for the pilot, which we just completed in May.
Well, that's terrific. So could you give us a sense of the program, how it was initially thought about, and how the program is structured?
I mean, it just kind of evolved organically as we thought about what did we need to teach? Could we as analysts do all of it? And, you know, we needed to bring in other people who have more experience in the coaching world and the business school, which has experience with marketing and all of that. So that's why it ended up being housed in the business school. The way the program developed is both didactic and experiential. We had class meetings and online learning. And I'll just kind of describe what we did in the pilot. We had, the pilot was 16 candidates. As I said, we just finished up in May. The people were carefully selected from a range of experience and careers. They ranged from early to mid to even late career business people, and some were even new business school graduates who had little coaching experience. And some people had extensive experience in business consulting and human resources, and there were a few who had different kinds of coaching backgrounds. What we ended up doing is we taught from five different perspectives. And they were the traditional foundational executive coaching based in the International Coaching Federation guidelines. That was module one. Module two was the psychoanalytic perspective. Module three was neuroscience and brain-based coaching. And module four included family systems, mindfulness, and executive health.
So clearly a model of analysts working together with other disciplines, with other orientations.
Absolutely. We all learn so much from each other because we don't otherwise sort of study all of this. When we got into the program in the classroom, for the most part, all the faculty attended everyone else's module, so we could really learn about what each of us was doing. It was very valuable.
And how did you feel that the other chairs of the modules responded to the analysts?
We were very pleasantly surprised. We were kind of scared that we would be looked at as sort of antiquated, odd people, you know, but they were fascinated by what we had to offer. It was very exciting and very refreshing, actually.
So how did you approach your model in particular, and how did you make analytic thinking come alive for the business students?
I'll get to your question, but I wanted to explain sort of how the program was structured. There were four modules. Each module had separate faculty, one or two that worked together. Gail and I were the leads for the psychoanalytic module. We went on campus in the business school for 5 weekends, which included Friday afternoons from about lunch to 6 o'clock and all day Saturday. And most of the weekends were spaced about 3 weeks apart. So during the three-week intervals between the residency weekends, there were a variety of online learning, including webinars, readings, and writing assignments. And then once we got together in the residence weekends, we had lectures, class discussions, peer coaching. We had learning circles of four candidates each, so we had small group discussions. And then we had a continuous case conference, which was an idea that came from our perspective. And Gail and I were the discussants for the case conference. And then in the second half of the program, there was a practicum, and each candidate chose a volunteer coaching client, and they conducted 3 one-hour coaching sessions that were observed by their executive coach and then had a supervision and debriefing after each session. So that's how it was structured. As far as how did we make analytic thinking come alive, I'll tell you, that was a big challenge. We had 3 weeks and about 12 hours of face-to-face time with business people. We were so out of our element. You know, in analytic training, we have at least 4 years. So we really had to think about what were the most important concepts we psychoanalysts could offer business coaches. That was really hard to kind of boil down everything we know to the kind of three key concepts. And we decided on the power of emotions process and the way we use ourselves in the clinical encounter. We didn't know how far their interest would extend into psychoanalytic themes. So we decided to play it safe and not use any psychoanalytic terminology. So what we did was before the weekend, once module one was done, we had 3 weeks before we were going to see them in the classroom. So before the weekend together, we posted online a few papers that we wrote, and I won't list them all, but for example, we wrote one about analytic listening. We had another one about self-awareness and knowing your own mind, and one that had a few case examples. We did a webinar in which we described the coaching process in practice from a psychoanalytic perspective from start to finish. And then we had one writing assignment. The candidates wrote a 2-page paper. And to sum it up, the goal was to reflect on their own experience in an interpersonal interaction, paying attention to the emotions, the tone, the energy, the way that each person was affected. And so when we got together on Friday for our first weekend session, one of the first things we did is we conducted balance-like groups to discuss these reflection papers. And we chose this exercise because we had a group of business people who are mostly strangers to one another come together for an intensive program in coaching. And we were telling them, you have to get comfortable knowing your feelings and using them. So we wanted to give them an opportunity to really try it out in a safe way. So we divided the class into two groups of eight. I was the moderator for one group. Gail was the moderator for the other group. And each person in turn had an opportunity to read their paper and then step out of the circle and then have the group discuss how they would feel if they were in the writer's shoes. And then the writer would come back and reflect on what was said. It was a very short period of time. We had each person's paper had, I think it was 10 or 12 minutes to be discussed. But the focus was on the experience of the coach, not the experience of the person they were talking to. And so that was what we took from Balint. The candidates opened up, they shared something of themselves in a safe space, and they began to get to know one another. The exercise was really powerful, and it really promoted group bonding, and it was very well received.
Well, it sounds like they got a tremendous amount out of it, and they really took to, in all of these examples, really took to, you know, the process of really of looking at themselves and trying to understand themselves better.
They really did. That we were very impressed with that. And sometimes it was emotional, but everyone participated fully, and it was very moving, actually, and powerful. I agree.
How would you say, in general, the students did receive the program? Did you get a lot of feedback? Have you gotten a lot of feedback?
We did. So the business school has a motto. It comes in the front of every PowerPoint. Feedback is a gift.
Right.
And so after every session, whether it was an online learning or after every session that we did in person, they had feedback forms that they filled out. So we were constantly getting feedback, and it was the program was very well received. And what we learned was that many of them want to learn more about psychoanalysis. I had a small group of four. They were very excited. We did not require them to read the Kathleen Sandler book on executive coaching, but I suggested if they wanted more, that was a great one to read, and they all ordered it. Some of the candidates really want to be coaches. Some of them were finishing their careers and moving into something else. Some of them were kind of figuring out what they wanted to do with their careers, and they were very happy to earn an Emory diploma, which is what they got, that supported their developing identities as coaches. And some saw it as the beginning of an ongoing training. At the end, they set up a LinkedIn group just for people to continue to communicate who were participants.
Maybe you could say a little bit more, Lisa. What I think it would be helpful to hear a little bit more about, you know, who signed up for this program, the kinds of people that signed up for it.
We had people from kind of what we consider young to older. So we had people in their, maybe in their early 30s to people in their 50s and 60s. They range from new business school graduates working in HR to people working in mid-sized consulting firms who wanted to move more into coaching. We had several people who were in their own business. One of the people was a career coach, which I got to learn all about what that is actually and how that's very different from executive coaching.
So they're people well established in their roles in business.
Some were well established, some were younger and not quite established, but the program was designed to attract mid-career professionals.
Give me a sense of how you're thinking about the future of the program. Are there things that are you thinking about making any significant changes in it going forward?
Yes, actually. So the program is no longer going to be a pilot. It's going to be the full program. We are accepting applications in October to begin at the beginning of next year. We plan to double the class size. That will be a challenge. And it will continue in the same format and the same length of time. We're going to rearrange some of the components. So the brain-based coaching is going to precede us. We felt that we would go from the brain to the mind. That made sense as we learned more about the brain-based coaching. We are not going to shy away from analytic theory and terminology. We thought more about what we could offer and how we could be of most help to coaches. And one thing that everyone has to deal with and we're probably best suited to help with is resistance. So we're going to focus a lot of our in-classroom work on how to deal with resistance, how to recognize defenses and how to deal with resistance. As far as kind of offshoots of the program, because there has been a lot of interest in more. We may find that there's enough interest to offer more analytically informed training in the business school. One thought we have is to possibly offer specialized executive education programs or seminars with ongoing supervision. They may offer a psychoanalytic coaching curriculum within the business school. And interestingly, Rick supervised the psychiatry residents, and they have expressed an interest in a fourth-year elective in psychoanalytic coaching. So ultimately, the psychiatry department could promote the opportunity that a resident could also earn a diploma in executive coaching and have some training in organizational psychology. So there's so many ways that this could play out. We could imagine a lot of different things, and we'll just have to keep working with the students and see where they want to go.
So this is certainly the model of psychoanalysts off the couch, and it's exactly what we were hoping to feature, really, in doing this podcast. I do wonder, in thinking about this program and in thinking about our audience and people that are interested in this program, maybe developing a similar type of program, it really seems that what's critical from the outset is the special relationship that you had with the business school that Rick was able to develop and sort of merge the two organizations. What could you say about that for people that might be interested in, you know, thinking about this kind of program for their institutes?
You know, most institutes are not in universities with these kinds of connections. I think what allowed us to be so effective to plan this program so quickly and to implement it was the structure and the support of the business school. So the pilot was funded by an innovation grant through the university that was directed through the business school. I think that the key would be just strong relationships with community leaders. I think it would be really hard for an institute in isolation to do something like this. You really need the expertise and the background of people in the field.
But what's fascinating is that once the door was open, people really saw the value of an analytic perspective in this work.
They did. People were very excited. It was very surprising. We were pleasantly very surprised, I have to say. And one of the target audiences that we're looking at is to try to recruit some physicians in leadership positions to attend this this program. We think it could be very useful in academic medicine.
Well, this is terrific, Lisa. Thank you so much. I assume you will be open to people's inquiries, further inquiries about the program.
Sure. People can contact me. I have good support here too with Rick and Gail, and we are happy to talk about it or take it on the road.
Is there anything else you would like to say that you think that we haven't covered that you'd like to say about the you know, the unique, I mean, I think you've made it pretty clear about what an analyst brings to working with students, working with business school students, faculty, as well as people in business.
Yeah, I think we get, you know, especially now in business, what's valued in leadership are the soft skills, not the kind of dictatorial, you know, top-down command and control. So this is a time where analysts can be extremely valuable in the business world. I think, you know, most of us who do the work that we do and took the path that we took to get here, sit in our offices and, you know, with patients behind the couch, and we're so laser focused on this, on the one-on-one clinical experience, that we kind of forget that we actually have a lot to offer if we broaden our perspective.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa. We really appreciate it. And as I said, I think what you've talked about really is a model for this podcast and for how psychoanalysts can work in many different ways off the couch. So thank you again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.